The conference is being recorded.
Okay, well, welcome everybody. This is our second conference call for FS101, Use Spaces and Places Creatively. And I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of the Kwamundan First Nation and Ton Quashin Council. I'd like to thank those of you who've already shared your ideas, both yourself, Haley, and Jed, about how to better or more creatively use a space or place in your community. And I'm not sure if you had a chance to look at other people's ideas, but there's some neat ideas about buildings, college facilities, campgrounds, trails, and ways to make it more inviting so that people in your community might participate a bit more. So, Jed, I really liked your idea about programming for trails, because everybody likes going on trails, but they can be kind of boring sometimes. So I thought that was a great example. And I did pop somebody's name in there if you want to follow up on, I think you called it basket golf. Is that the same as disc golf?
I meant disc golf, sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. We were talking about the same thing then. I just heard a beep. This is Caroline. Did somebody just join the call?
Hi, Caroline. It's Joshua Wilcox here.
Oh, I hear two voices. Sorry. Joshua, you said you joined the call?
That is correct, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. And did somebody else just join the call as well as Joshua?
Yes, it's me, Juliana.
Hello, Juliana. How are you? I got lots of people with names starting with the letter J. So we have on the call Jess, Haley, Joshua, and Juliana. And I just started the conference call recording, so welcome. And now that we have a few more people on the call, Joshua and Juliana, if you would like to jump into the chat, I can pop the questions in there as we go through and have our conversation. So I see Joshua in there. Juliana, do you remember how to get into the chat room? Okay, I'll keep going then, and we'll see you in there in a minute then. So thanks everyone for joining. Oh, sorry. How do you get in there? So you go into the main learning event and scroll down to week two. And under week two, look for number 5, conference call. And that's a hyperlink, and when you click that, it will open a new page. And underneath the times, there's a link that says click to enter the chat now.
Okay,
did I say that pretty fast? Okay, that's great. And if not, no worries. I'll just make sure I'm very clear with how I repeat the questions. So I was just thanking everyone for sharing their ideas about last week about how to more creatively use spaces or places. And it's really neat because you guys pulled out some common spaces in your communities. But also the other thing I think you did is talk about how you can expand your programming for those spaces and maybe use them in new ways or add to what their purpose already is. And I think that that's a great way to make use of what we have in our communities. So thank you for sharing that last week. On our call today, we're going to share our thoughts about outdoor spaces and ways in which we can encourage others to get out on the land and connect with nature. But before we get into this week's content, let's just do a quick round of introductions, and I will go with the order that you joined the call. That's probably not a good idea because it probably makes people want to join the call later, but anyways, I'll mix it up as we get into it. Our circle for today will go Jed, Haley, Joshua, and then Juliana. So what I'd like you to do as part of your introduction is just reflect on your own connection to land and nature. And if you'd like to, you don't have to, but if you'd like to, just share what encourages you to connect or what's meaningful for you. And I'll go first so that you have an example, and I will also let me just pop the question in the chat so that you can then read it from the chat. So the question again is, please introduce yourself, and then what encourages you to get out on the land and connect with nature? So as you might know, my name's Caroline, and I'm based out of Whitehorse. For me, we moved out of town a couple of years ago, and I just love the feeling of fresh air in my lungs when I go outdoors. I got lots of trees around our house and lots of trails out the back. And the way I feel when I'm outdoors makes me want to go outdoors more. Unfortunately, sometimes computers tie me down, but I think that physically being outdoors is invigorating, and mentally it's relaxing. So that's kind of what connects me to getting outdoors. So let's go to Jed. Jed, would you like to introduce yourself, and if you feel like it, share what encourages you to get out and connect with nature?
Hey, I am Jed Sharp from Teslin, and I'd like to explore and discover new things and have little adventures out forever on the land. That's what I like out there.
Yeah, and it's always changing, right? So there's always something more to explore. I think I love that word. That's great. Thanks, Jed. Haley, how about yourself? I just said your name, obviously, but if you'd like to introduce yourself and if you feel like it, share what encourages you to get out on the land or connect with nature.
So I'm Haley from Teslin as well. I basically grew up in the bush. My family has had a trap line since I was 4, and I've helped my grandpa run it since then. One of my favorite things to do is fish and hunt, so any chance I get to do either of those, I take it. My uncle is a big fisherman, so we're normally out all winter, all summer, any chance we get.
Oh, that's wonderful, and it's great to have family members to get out and learn those skills, but also have a chance to go out and do them, and, you know, that sort of family experience out on the land, I think, is really important too. So thanks for sharing that, Haley. Is the trap line down around Teslin that your grandpa has, or?
It's about 3 hours in the bush behind Brayburn.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's great. What a gorgeous area. That's wonderful.
Yeah, most of my family is located in Whitehorse. I just decided to move out here.
Yeah, and then you're not too far from Whitehorse, so that's good. And Teslin's so beautiful with the lake right there.
Yes, sure is.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Haley. Okay, let's go to Joshua. If you feel like introducing yourself and sharing a bit about what encourages you to connect with nature.
All right, no worries. My name's Joshua. I work here in Sarah at the Rec Center. What gets me outside the most is I have 5 children. I don't know if anybody has kids, but keeping them confined inside will drive you crazy. So any chance I can get outdoors is great.
I love how you explained that. That's great. And actually, when you first started, when you joined the first learning event a couple of years ago, you shared a picture of you with your kids, and I think I used it in this activity. I did have your permission to use that. So
yeah,
I often in that situation. So thanks for sharing that. And Julianne, how about yourself? Would you like to introduce yourself and share, if you feel like it, what encourages you to connect with nature or get out on the land?
Yes, for sure. So here's Julianne from Cambridge Bay. Actually, I'm originally from Brazil.
Oh, you're originally from Brazil?
Yes. It's been more than
10 years. You're a long way from home.
Yes, and this is one of the things. And I'm from the São Paulo, the biggest city in South America. So the connection to the nature, living like a lot, and it's not something that I was used to growing up. But as I moved here, Canada is when I started. But actually, going out for us being on the nature was basically going to the beach. So it was always nice for me just to go and hear the sound of the waves, or when I was going to a lake or something like this. So it was more this connection to the water that before coming here. And as just mentioned, it's my girl also that is out to you, and she's the one that is pushing me and helping me to remember to always be out.
That's great. It's interesting, hey, where we grow up, that
different influences. I grew up in Vancouver, and the water, the ocean, was always a really big part of growing up. And even having lived in the Yukon for 35 years, I still miss the ocean. So, but I guess in Cambridge Bay, you guys are on the ocean in Cambridge Bay, right?
Yes, we are. Even if it's cold, she looks, she always has to go to the water. And it's beautiful to see that she has the same kind of connection. Her dad is from Quebec. And so the trees for him, for example, is something that is important. He missed that a lot for me. I'm like, don't you miss the trees? I want her to be around the trees. I don't really miss that to me. Around, for sure, Brazil is a really big country, and there are people that they leave, but I'm down with some of the parts in the Amazon, etc. But it was not the way that I grew up. It's been a nice experience, experimenting outdoor space, and then get this further connection to the nature.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's wonderful. That brings a different experience and a different understanding for those of us who were, you know, maybe born and raised in Canada, too. So thanks, Juliana. So this week, the learning event this week invites you to explore the importance of connecting people to nature through recreation. And if you've had a look at the presentation slides for FS 101, slide 15 points out that this is goal number 3 of the framework for recreation in Canada. And obviously, as Juliana mentioned, you know, if you grow up in an urban area or a city, your connection to nature might be very different than, like, Haley, what yours is, for example. But I don't think it matters where we actually live or where we work in recreation. It is so important to make sure that we use recreation to help people connect with their outdoors. You know, we can do it so that connection to nature offers physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual benefits for everyone. It doesn't matter what age you are. You might hear my new granddaughter in the background, and she's 4 months old, and she loves looking out the window at the trees. Like, she just, since she was born, she looks up at the tall trees and is fascinated by them. So I think any age can benefit from that connection. We also know that people will connect with nature in different ways. Through physical activity, through meditation or art, or with family, or in Joshua's case, with family, with 5 kids. Probably a different experience than when I go out by myself. And we also know that promoting a better understanding of the importance of nature in regards to not only well-being, but also child development is really important. Another reason, or at least what the research has shown, why we might want to connect people to nature through recreation is that people who have a closer connection to their natural environments are more likely to make a stand for protecting the environment and using it sustainably. So, you know, as especially somewhere like Faro, where you've got a big mine on your doorstep, the understanding and the connection of and the importance, like creating attitudes and awareness about the importance of sustaining our environments for future generations is really important. So that's another important thing that we can do in recreation, is we can raise that awareness and shape those attitudes. Activity number 4, as well as slides 15 to 19, encourage you to watch a short Parks Canada video called Nature for All, and also to explore the Nature Playbook, which is a Parks Canada or a Parks Council resource. And you don't have to answer this question, but I'm just wondering if you did have a chance to either watch the video or explore the resource, if there was anything like that stood out for you. You know, did one key message stand out for you? Did it make the most sense? Anything like that? So I'll pop that question in the chat. It's not a question that you have to answer. I'll just go around to give everybody an opportunity to answer if you want to. And this time we'll start with Haley and then go Joshua, Juliana, and Jed. So, Haley, if you had a chance to look at those resources, the video or the other resource, what's the key message that stood out for you? And don't feel bad if you say, I didn't look at them yet. That's totally okay as well.
I'm going to have to pass, as I haven't had a chance to look at them yet, and my computer just crapped out on me, and I can't log into it anymore.
Okay, no worries. It's just an opportunity to reflect on things. So I do not judge if people haven't had a chance to look at it, and thanks for being honest. So thank you. Joshua, how about yourself? Did you have a chance to watch the video or look at the nature playbook?
Oh, I'm going to... Yeah, I can't. I didn't actually get a chance to look at it.
Okay, no worries. How about you, Juliana? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Joshua.
No, that was it. That's all I got.
Okay. That's totally okay. I apologize. I don't want to put anybody on the spot. So I'm okay with you saying that because I know sometimes it's hard to do everything in the midst of very busy days. So thanks for being honest. Juliana, did you have a chance to look at either the video or the nature playbook?
Yes, I did. At the video, it was interesting to see. I was trying to get some ideas to have a lesson with my baby and her friends around. And get an outside, actually. We're thinking about toddlers and the needs that they have because there are not a lot of activity programs for them. Yeah?
Yeah. So you're using it for your own family then, and the age that your children are at. And you might be interested in sort of the forest school type of approach. And there's one in Yellowknife and there's one in Whitehorse, but I don't think there's any in Nunavut, not because there's no forest, but it's more of an outdoor education setting that they've started doing for young children so that they can actually learn in their outdoor environments, and they found it quite beneficial. So that might interest you to explore further, too. Thanks, Juliana. Jed, how about yourself? Did you have a chance to take a look at the video or look at the resource?
Yeah, I thought it was cool to see all the them encouraging exploration with the kids and them figuring things out for themselves and through, however they go about exploring outdoors.
Yeah, and it really talks about
risk.
Exactly. So that risk taking. Sorry, my phone sometimes has a delay. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize.
Good.
Yeah, and that links to what you said earlier in the call about, enjoying exploring your natural world and going outdoors and exploring. And I think sometimes we are worried about risk, and probably because of liability and lawsuits and everything like that. But we also have to provide risky opportunities for kids. Like, we have to provide opportunities to climb a tree and walk across the log and, paddle in the lake and all those sorts of things because, that helps them really develop. It develops confidence. It develops physical literacy. And it's just important for health and well-being as we move forward. So, thanks for mentioning the risk part of it. If anyone's interested, I've added a link in the Explore More section, and it's a free online course offered by the Child and Nature Alliance of Canada, and it's called Introduction to Risky Play. And it might not apply so much for your own children, but like Joshua, if you're doing programming for kids outdoors, it might be interesting for you to take a look at it because it helps you understand sort of the what you can do and how risky play is important, but how we can sort of make sure that we put strategies in place so that we don't end up with lawsuits and things like that. So just thought I'd point that out, that might be interesting. So, Jed, thanks for mentioning the idea of risk in the outdoors. So moving on then, I mentioned that the experience of feeling connected to nature and to the land offers physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual benefits for people of all ages, and that being active outdoors helps children develop and grow. Being on the land, as Haley mentioned, also teaches and sustains cultural traditions and activities and practices, and also language, too.
Though outdoor recreation and land-based activities are important in many cultures because they teach respect and care for the land, the animals, and the environment. There's a really neat website. It's from the group. It's in NWT, so I know that doesn't necessarily apply to anybody on the call, but it's called the NWT On the Land Collaborative, and you can find the link in the Explore More section and on slide 23. And the reason I thought I'd point it out is the collaborative was created in 2015, and it promotes and supports on-the-land initiatives in NWT in the Northwest Territories. So government, charitable, corporate, and other partners combine their efforts and make it easier for communities to access money and other resources. Although the collaborative, unfortunately for all of us on the call, only funds projects in the NWT, they have some really cool stories. So their projects report through a story. So you can go onto their website and look at the stories of the different projects that were done out on the land and the impact that they've had. So, you know, before I started the conference call recording, Jed, we were talking about, and Haley, about summer activities that you guys would be doing. And so, you know, if you're ever stuck for ideas, something like the NWT On the Land Collaborative website is a great idea to go, or a great place to go and get some new ideas. So just that, I just thought I'd suggest that. So really, who we are and where we live, as Juliana's pointed out, influences our relationship with the land and nature. I think all of us working in recreation recognize the outdoor opportunities that we have in the north. And despite some of our harsh winters and mosquito-filled summers, it's easier for us, I think, to get out on the land compared to people who live in a city. But it's not always easy for everyone. I've heard stories of barriers, you know, especially elders who used to get out on the land and because of various reasons aren't able to anymore. So there are barriers that can make it difficult for some people to be active outdoors and to get out on the land. So I'm going to invite you, and we're going to start with Joshua this time, but I'll give an example first. I'm wondering if you can share something like a barrier or something that you think might make it difficult for people in your community to get out on the land. And so we'll go Joshua, Juliana, Jed, and then Haley. And I'll go first, Joshua, so I don't put you on the spot. I'll give you an example of what is going through my mind. So I've heard a number of times about Beaver Creek. So Juliana, Beaver Creek is a very small Yukon community, and it's up on the Alaska border. And they have about 7 or 8 kids in the school there. And I've heard how they really try hard to get their kids outdoors and do outdoor programming, but that most children come to school without warm socks or mitts, and that makes it difficult for them most of the year to get outdoors. So it's a barrier because families can't afford to buy that. They probably can't buy it in their community. And then also the school can't always afford to be buying things for the kids to have. So they try and have some on hand. But so that barrier of not having the right clothing or equipment can make it difficult for people to get out on the land sometimes. Joshua, how about in your community? Is there one thing that you have seen or that might make it difficult for some people to get out on the land or out in nature or in the bush?
I would have to say accessibility. For seniors and for some kids that have some disabilities and challenges, some of our trails and stuff like that are not very accessible to our elders and other individuals.
Yeah, and that's hard, isn't it? So especially if somebody, when, you know, maybe they're younger, they enjoy getting outdoors, and then as they get older, they want to do it, but there's, you know, the trails have roots all over them or big mud holes or things like that, or they don't have someone to take them out. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's definitely a challenge. Juliana, how about either in your community or you know, maybe where you've come from, what's something that can make it difficult for people to get out on the land?
Well, we mentioned the same different kind of issues you both pointed out. The first one is interested because here in our community that you, last year actually, the social service students from the Arte College, they had a program where they were raising funds to get equipment for kids, but actually they were shoes for them when they had, you know, for them to play soccer or basketball, because they were just always with the socks. They didn't have the shoes to be able to do that. And then we start to realize, oh, kids, they need more tools to get out, even that and to be active. Even at the place that I mentioned here, the West Ham, what we did, and it's a place that is not, you need to get a vehicle and go on the nice road, and a lot of kids, their families, they don't have the transportation and the means to get there. And then actually when they're there sliding off, they said, oh, they cannot all afford all of this flat. So we had a program where, in partnership with the Embrace Life Council and the Wellness Center, we got the kids some flats. They didn't have the appropriate clothes and everything, so we were able to get funding also, get together with some of the semesters in town and make some parkas for them. And we arranged the rides with the RSMB, with the wellness workers, and with some other people. And it's been maybe almost 2 months, and we're trying to get them there every other Wednesday. So for sure, transportation, equipment. It's one of the issues over here as well.
Well, that's a really good example of more than one barrier, and I appreciate you sharing how you've kind of overcome it, because it's not just through one way, it's through working with other organizations and groups in the community, or like the Embrace Life Council that serves Nunavut, to, you know, try and overcome those barriers, because that's pretty significant, you know. It's you can't get there. You don't have the sled for sliding on, and you don't have the clothing for going in the outdoors. So it makes it difficult, but it's such an important activity for kids to go and get active outdoors. So thanks for sharing that story. Jed, how about yourself? You know, what's one thing that you think might make it difficult for people in your community to get out on the land or in the bush?
I think sometimes people feel like they're too busy or too tired to do anything. Just going to stay in their routine and, yeah.
So is that maybe one of the reasons why you suggested in your activity last week that you posted to try and do some sort of group programming on trails, or, you know, put activities like archery or disc golf, because that might, you know, just getting up and going for a walk is sometimes hard. You might be tired. You might have had a long day. But if there's an activity that you can go and do with other people, it might be easier. Is that what you were kind of thinking when you posted that last week?
Well, any sort of encouragement would be nice. Get yourself moving. It means going with someone else, then that's good.
No, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Haley, how about yourself? You know, it sounds like you've had the opportunity to be out on the land a lot. Do you ever observe barriers for other people for having similar experiences? And what would those barriers be?
So, like, one barrier is, like, disabilities. So one of my cousins is autistic. So it's hard for her to go out on the land because the sun's too bright, or it's windy and it hurts her ears. So it's just, like, there's disabilities that are barriers. I also think COVID is a huge barrier because lots of communities used to do group things outside before COVID. And then that kind of all got shut down. And
yeah, that's
their
a
mindset.
Good point. Yeah, and we've put in place over the last 2+ years quite a mindset about not gathering in groups and being careful and all that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, that makes people hesitant to go back and start to do those activities again. So I like how you point out the disabilities too. I'm not super familiar with autism, but when you said that, I'm like, wow, yeah, that makes lots of sense. Light, sunshine, wind, you know, different distractions or things like that. So thanks for sharing that. That's important as well. So it is, you know, I'm not saying that it's not possible for everyone to get out on the land, but I think that if you're aware of the barriers that are there, as Juliana, you explained with your example of getting the kids out sledding, you can overcome that. Sometimes it takes a little bit of work. I heard a story from Kugluktuk a few years ago where there was, you know, they kind of identified the elders who no longer had anyone to take them out on the land, and they created a buddy system so that somebody would go pick up the elder and take them out as well along with them. So, you know, that buddy system, I've actually heard about Teslin about 15 years ago using the buddy system to get kids to recreation programming too. So there are different ways that you can overcome those barriers. So I encourage you to, you know, consider what they are and consider who's not participating and how can you make it easier for them to participate. I think that all of you, you know, recognize that working in recreation, you have a commitment to making a difference in your communities, and you do understand the importance of being active outdoors and on the land and why this might be difficult for some of your community members. If our overall responsibility as recreation leaders is to improve the quality of life for others, then we really have to think about everybody in our communities. And this can take time, it can take effort, it can take good planning. As Juliana mentioned, it can take partnerships and working with RCMP and social services and other groups. And of course, overcoming barriers also takes resources like money as well. But when it comes to encouraging people to connect with nature, start with what you can do, even if your actions seem small or insignificant. So what I kind of imagine, if you close your eyes for a sec, nobody can see you with your eyes closed, so just close your eyes and imagine, you know, the ice is going out on a small pond and you have a pebble in your hand. And imagine taking that pebble and dropping it in the pond. And at first there's a little splash, but then you notice that a ripple grows and spreads. And so I think that our jobs as recreation leaders is to just find one or two pebbles. We don't have to find massive rocks, just one or two pebbles. And when we drop them in or do something with those, they make ripples. And that is the effect that we're looking for in our communities. So this brings me to the last question that I'd like to ask you today. And the question is, as a recreation leader, what's one thing that you could commit to doing that would help others in your community connect with the land and with nature? So I'll pop that in the chat, and Juliana, I'm going to put you on the spot first for this question. I'll repeat it again just so that it's there for you. So I'm popping it in the chat too. So Juliana, in your role in recreation in Cambridge Bay, what's one thing that you can do to help others in your community connect with the land?
I wasn't able to connect to the net. Can I just answer here, or do I need to write it down there later?
No, you can just share it. Like, I think that you've already given us an example that, you know, taking the kids sliding every 2 weeks and making sure that it's possible and that you're overcoming barriers. Are there other things that, you know, in your role in recreation that you think you might be able to do to help people in your community connect with the land?
Yeah, we were discussing about some peer-to-peer programs with elders and youth to see if we could get made for them to come. Starting one to 3 days out on the land. Last time I was meeting with the elders, they expressed that they wanted to keep connecting with the kids, especially out on the land, not just in the building that we have here. So I work with a part that is looking for funding and trying to put the thing together. So I'm currently working on this, trying to get a kind of activity that we could get both elders and kids, how to prepare your camp if you need to, when you're out, not just for hunting, but also for survivors, they go out one day for traveling, for any matter. So we're trying to put this together.
Yeah, that's great. If you need any resources or connections with other communities, let me know. I do know that the NWT On the Land Collaborative has a number of examples, but there's also, I have somebody in my advanced learning events, and she works out of Iqaluit, and they have a group up in Iqaluit, and her role is simply for bringing people together and doing on the land programming. So if you'd like to, I can always put you in touch with her as well. Just a couple of suggestions that might help. And then there is, there's a really neat, it'll come up in our next learning event, but Tugluktuk youth and elders have done a documentary for On the Land about 4 or 5 years ago. So if you'd like, I can send you that link too, just to give you, you know, if it will help give you some suggestions and ideas.
Please send me all the information you have.
That's great. Thank you. Thanks for sharing. Let's go to Jed, then Haley, then Joshua. Jed, it sounds like your passion is trails and getting people to explore outdoors. So what's one thing that you as a recreation leader might be able to do to help others in your community connect with nature?
Maybe we could use like peer engagement. So find people who already like outdoors and encourage them to find it, take their friends with them or something like that who maybe are a bit uncomfortable going out.
Yeah, I think that's a really important way of doing things, is to breaking down those barriers by having someone with you who's really passionate about it. So that sort of peer support, whether it's with an elder or with somebody your own age too, either or. So thanks for sharing that. Haley, how about yourself? Do you have any ideas about what you might do as a recreation leader to help others in your community connect with nature?
Well, I'm surprised Jed didn't say this, but Jed started a program called Young Explorers, where we take kids out once a week and we just go on adventures and explore around Tubbs. And then another thing is I have a couple really good personal relationships with some of the kids that are in the age group that we're missing out on. And if I text them and I say, hey, I'm down at the rec box playing basketball, they'll come down.
So if you were to say, hey, I'm going down to go fishing, or I'm, you know, going out to, if you had to.
Yeah, like there's a couple of them that would be like, okay, can you come get me and can I come with you, because of the personal relationship I have with them.
That's awesome. That really does make a difference, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does.
Yeah, and those are probably kids that would love to do things but don't have, you know, sometimes in our communities, kids don't have significant adults in their lives. And I think as recreation leaders, we can be a significant adult in the lives of the children and youth in our communities. So that's, thanks for pointing that out. And, Jed, I'd love to hear a bit more about your Young Explorers program sometime. It would be great if you could share it at some point in time, maybe in a post or something. Thanks, Haley. Joshua, over to you. What's one thing, outside of, you know, you got 5 kids, that's a big task right there, but as a recreation leader, what's something that you either could do or do to help people in your community connect with nature?
Well, Pharaoh usually doesn't have too much of a problem getting outside. We're really good with that, especially skiing, walking, a whole bunch of stuff, but I think information
is huge. When you look at all the trails that expand through Whitehorse as well as any other community, it really helps to see the map, the beginning and the end. Is there places to sit? What do you expect to see? So on and so forth. I think with information like that, or even guided tours, like Jeb does with his Explored Youth, I think that's an incredible idea. Might actually have to take that under my wing here, in Sarah. But I really stand with information and advertising.
Yeah, those are some really great examples. And actually, you mentioned trails and mapping and places to sit. And that's a project, actually, ARPE has wanted to do. Juliana, ARPE stands for the Recreation and Parks Association of the Yukon. So it's similar to ARPAN, that where Don's the executive director. But I know Anne at ARPE has been pretty enthusiastic about not doing something like Yukon hikes, where they're big, intensive, you know, 50-kilometer hikes, but doing something like Yukon Walks to make it more accessible for people, and that people do know there's X number of benches on this trail, or it's, you know, accessible if you have a disability, or it's close to town, things like that. So, that's important to point out. And it sounds like, Joshua, you got a little bit of an interest in Jed's Young Explorers program. So I'm wondering if, Jed, you can quickly give us a snapshot of some of the types of things that you do in that program.
Okay, one thing I really enjoy doing is we've made a fort, and we've also gone on long walks around doing what they, where they want to go, usually. Sometimes we've helped out people, like stacking their wood and cleaned up trash around Chesland. Yeah.
So mostly just using your community spaces that are outdoors for different activities, and activities that get kids away from their screens and more active outdoors, right?
Yeah, good.
That's great. Thanks. Joshua, did you have any other questions about the program that Jed's running in Teslin?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I got a lot of really wild kids here in Faro. What's one of the most, because you were saying that you sometimes allow the kids to choose what they want to do for that day or that trip or whatever. What's one of the craziest things one of your kids is asked to do? And did you do it?
Well, if it's too crazy, I usually try to suggest something else. So, one of the somewhat crazy, but not really, we went to one of the kids' personal pile of sticks that was a fort. They like collecting things that are sometimes a bit too heavy and dragging them around with them on our hikes. And yeah.
Oh, that's amazing, man. What age group do you usually get out for these, like?
Anywhere from
really young,
6 to 12.
That's awesome. All right. That's perfect, man. I'm really excited. I'll throw out some information and let you know, because I'm really interested, and I'm going to try to get something started like that here.
Yeah, that's good.
That's great. And if you guys ever need to just contact each other, you can use the chat, or you can find people's email address by clicking on the list of participants. So, if you have more questions, this is great, because this is exactly what I hope we can do through our learning events, is for you to share ideas with each other and take away things that, are meaningful and useful to you. So thanks for having that extra conversation there. It's good to share ideas. Okay, well, thanks so much. I think that was a really great conference call today. I really appreciate you contributing to the discussion today. I can't believe that we only, after you finish this learning event, we only have one left in our this year's program cycle. Our program cycle sort of mirrors the school year, so it starts in September and wraps up in May. So when you've finished today, please go in and your second RLA or required learning activity, it's pretty straightforward. It's something about yourself, so it's just reflecting on a positive experience from your childhood and describing that. You can add pictures if you want to. I've had people do this and add photos and things like that. You can do it as a drawing, as a poem if you want to, if you're creative that way. It doesn't have to be just, you know, a written piece of words. So use whatever works for you to describe both the experience you had and then, you know, what you took away from that. So that's due on Sunday. And then we actually do start another learning event on Monday, and it will be RS103, which is Value Northern Recreation Arts, Culture, and Sport. And that's our last one before we wrap up for the summer. If you're continuing your training with us in the fall, and you need to see a schedule so you know when things are taking place, there's a schedule on our website, which is www.recnorth.ca. And if you're not sure which learning events you need to do, there's a couple of ways you can find out. You can see which ones you've completed by clicking on your profile, because your little icons or badges will pop up. Or you can also ask me, hey, Caroline, which ones am I supposed to do next year? So that's totally okay, whatever you would like to do that way. So if you have any questions, please stay on the line after I stop the recording. And once you've finished this learning event, please take a couple of minutes just to share your feedback. It shows up in activity number 7, which is towards the bottom on the main page. So, merci chou, merci, Kwana. Thank you so much, everybody, for taking the time to join and to chat today. And it makes me want to go outside, like right now, because it's sunny out. So, have a wonderful weekend, and just stay on the line if you have any other questions.